You are now listening to Mark's Unexplained World by Mark the Medium, available on YouTube, Spotify, Amazon Prime, Podbean, and most other podcast platforms. Tonight's episode is about the history of Skid Row. So it's over to you now, Mark.
There is a neighbourhood in downtown Los Angeles that is officially known as Central City East. However, to the locals and pretty much to the rest of the world, it is also known as Skid Row. This area contains one of the largest stable populations of homeless people in the United States, with an estimated 4,400 people living rough. It has been known for its condensed homeless population since the 1930s, spreading across more than 50 city blocks. It is bordered by 3rd Street to the north, 7th Street to the south, Alameda Street to the east, and Main Street to the west. And although Skid Row may seem like a modern-day problem, what with LA's luxury homes and five-star hotels just down the road, it has actually been a part of the city life for well over a century, what with its long history of police raids, targeted city initiatives, and homelessness advocacy. It makes it one of the most notable districts in the city of Los Angeles. Greetings, Unexplainers. Thank you for tuning in once again and listening to this abandoned episode of Mark's Unexplained World. My name is Mark Hughes, a psychic medium, a paranormal investigator, and a true crime buff. And just to give you a better idea of who I am and what I do, every Monday night I do a podcast on the various subjects under the Unexplained banner. These include ufology, hauntings, disasters, and all sorts of paranormal phenomena, including true crime, unsolved crime, and missing people. So, if you are listening to this show on YouTube, please give us a review and a thumbs up, and subscribe to my channel. And if you are listening on any other of the podcast platforms, again, give us a like and a follow. In this episode, I'm going to tell you about the story surrounding the history of Skid Row. And this week's necessary disclaimer. This story is a tale that sadly involves people and animals in destitute situations, so may prove upsetting to some. You listen at your own discretion. Also, all opinions and comments are strictly my own, but the facts of the case still remain. I also apologise if I pronounce anything incorrectly. However, I must stress that I do not write the words that are given to me, I only pronounce them. Anyway, enough of this digressing. Let's get back to the story. The original source of the term Skid Row, or Skid Road, as an urban district, has been heavily debated over the years, but it is generally identified as originating from Vancouver in Canada. The term itself refers to an area of the city where people live who have fallen on hard times and have now found themselves on the skids. The term Skid Row itself derives from a logging term where loggers would transport their logs to a nearby river by sliding them down the roads on fabricated greased skids. In some instances, loggers would accompany their load to the bottom of the greased skid and would wait there for transportation to take them back up the hill to the logging camp for the next load. Over time, the term Skid Row began to be used for places where people with no money and nothing to do gathered, and then this term slowly became a generic in English-speaking North America for a depressed street in a city. The term was also in common usage in the mid-19th century and came to refer not just to the depressed street in a city, but to the logging camps and mills all along the Pacific coast. As when a logger was fired, he was also known to have been sent down to Skid Road. It is the end of the 19th century, and the number of residential hotels have opened in the Skid Row area, as it becomes the home to a few short-term recurring and seasonal local labourers. However, by the time the 1930s had arrived, Skid Row had become a dwelling to as many as 10,000 homeless people. The Skid Row area started to support saloons, residential hotels, and social services, which attracted people from the population that they served who congregated in the area. The area had started to become a neighbourhood of small hotels, movie theatres and cheap restaurants that served the transitory workers from the seasonal industries and nearby railroads. In the June of 1947, Chief Clements B. Horrell of the Los Angeles Police Department, or the LAPD, ordered what he called a blockade raid of the whole Skid Row area, where they arrested over 350 people. On an interesting side note, a blockade raid, or in some cases it is simply called a blockade, is the act of preventing a country or region from receiving or sending out food, supplies, weapons, communications, and sometimes people by the military or police. It is distinct from a siege in that a blockade is usually directed at an entire country, region, or place rather than a fortress or city. But the objective may not always be to conquer the area. Assistant Chief Joseph Reed of the LAPD claimed that, and I quote, "At least 50% of all the crime in Los Angeles originates in the Skid Row area." He also stated that there had been no, and I quote, "strong-arm robberies" on Skid Row as late as 1 week after the blockade raid had taken place. However, the long-time residents of Skid Row were very sceptical that these changes in the area would last very long. Jump forward a couple of years into the 1950s, and the Skid Row area began to evolve into a place where alcoholics, bums, or if you're listening from the UK, I mean tramps of course, hobos, beggars, outcasts, down and outs, and various other people who were then down on their luck would come to Skid Row to get a hot meal and a bed. Early in the 1950s, the city of Los Angeles began a program to rehabilitate Skid Row, and by 1956, they actually started a clearance of the decaying buildings around the area, which by July 1960, the clearance program was said to be 87% complete. It was found that with the increased building codes during the 1960s, owners of residential hotels within the Skid Row area found that demolition was to be a more cost-effective than adhering to any repairs. However, there was a downside, isn't there always? Unfortunately, due to the loss of the affordable housing by all the demolition work, many of the Skid Row residents suddenly found themselves homeless. Fast forward again to the 1970s, and two Catholic workers named Catherine Morris, now aged 84, who was a former nun, and her husband, a guy named Jeff Dietrich, now aged 72, founded an eatery called the Hippie Kitchen that was located in, of all places, the back of a van. And fair play to them both, Catherine Morris and Jeff Dietrich, because for over 40 years they remained highly active, feeding the Skid Row residents right up until March 2019. In 1976, Skid Row was then officially established by the City of Los Angeles officials as an unofficial containment zone where both shelters and service for homeless people would be tolerated. Throughout the 1960s and 1970s, many Vietnam War veterans found themselves drawn to Skid Row, mainly due to the services and missions that were already in place there. And unfortunately, due to having feelings of being outcast from other areas around the country, like those returning home after World War II, the Vietnam veterans also ended up on the streets. It was also around this time that the demographics of Skid Row shifted from what was predominantly white and elderly to those who are residing there today. After this first short break, in part two, we will look at Skid Row from the 1980s, including the many attempts to clear it up and to the dumping of bodies in its neighbourhood.
This show is brought to you courtesy of Neil Packer and the Haunted Antiques Paranormal Research Centre. Find them online at www.hauntedresearchcentre.com or at 9211 Regent Street, Hinckley, LE10 1AW. Open on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for guided tours of the haunted rooms at just £3 per person. Booking is essential at all times, and over 16s only, please, unless accompanied by an adult. The haunted rooms are extremely haunted, and paranormal activity could and has taken place at any time. Some areas and particular objects or items can be quite scary and unnerving. Membership is available for £25 to qualify for selective offers. And why not download the app available on both iOS and Android for only £3.99. to keep up to date with what is coming up at the centre.
Thanks for listening to Mark's Unexplained World. If you are interested in parapsychology, quantum sciences, and true encounters with the other side, you may wish to visit The Weird Walk Home. That's my show on YouTube. Also, stay tuned, because After Dark with Tilly and Mark is creeping your way in June. Additionally, if you are interested in weird sciences, you may like to purchase my brand new book on Amazon. That would be Weird Time by Tim R. Swartz. It features lots of strange explanations and encounters with time from myself and other notable names like Lon Strickler and more. Thanks for listening.
Move forward again. It is now the 1980s, and in the February of 1987, the LAPD Chief Darryl Gates and the then Mayor of Los Angeles, Tom Bradley, announced plans for yet another crackdown on the problem of homelessness on Skid Row. Both the police and firefighters conducted a number of sweeps throughout the city. Throughout Skid Row area. However, this plan was soon abandoned due to heavy opposition by advocates for the homeless. When the LAPD Chief Darrell Gates announced in the May of 1987 that the sweep on Skid Row would resume as planned, the Los Angeles City Attorney and future Mayor of LA, James K. Hahn, responded by saying that, and I quote,
"I'm not going to prosecute individuals for not having a place to stay. I simply will not prosecute people for being poor, underprivileged, and unable to find a place to sleep until I'm convinced that a viable alternative to sleeping on the streets exists."
The LAPD Chief Darrell Gates, who was still backed by the Mayor of Los Angeles, Tom Brady, responded, and I quote,
"As the elected City Attorney of Los Angeles, Mr. Hahn has a responsibility to file prosecutable cases which are presented to him by the Los Angeles Police Department."
After a few days, the then councilman, Zef Yaroslavsky, I do apologise if you're listening, introduced a proposal that the city should stop enforcing its anti-camping laws on Skid Row until adequate housing could be found for all its residents. The LA Council initially rejected Zef Yaroslavsky's proposal, but after the LA Council heard the testimony from the Assistant Police Chief David Dodson describing the LAPD's intended crackdown methodology, the council passed a motion asking LAPD Chief Darrell Gates not to enforce any anti-camping laws until adequate housing could be found for the Skid Row area's residents. Gee, I wonder how that went. Throughout most of its history, the Skid Row area population has mainly been single men. However, due to the recession of the 1990s, the demographics of the population changed somewhat, which resulted in many middle-class families breaking up. This meant that both single adults on their own added an increasing number of mostly women with their children arriving at Skid Row for both food, shelter, and any other assistance. It is now 2002, and the newly appointed LAPD Chief William Bratton announces a plan to clean up Skid Row again, only this time by, amongst other things, aggressively enforcing an old anti-camping ordinance law. On an interesting side note, the anti-camping ordinance as a law is the act of criminalising the act of sleeping in pitched tents or other structures on publicly owned property. In a statement from the US Federal Department of Justice, it argues that laws criminalising camping or sleeping outdoors are unconstitutional when there is either 1. Adequate shelter space for a city's homeless population, or 2. Any shelter restrictions preventing certain individuals from accessing shelter. This is because sleeping is a necessary, unavoidable function of being alive. The Department of Justice also argues that when people have nowhere else to sleep, their choice to camp or sleep outside cannot be seen as voluntary. Well, I know it wouldn't be my first choice. In the April of 2006, the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit ruled in favour of the American Civil Liberties Union, or the ACLU for short, in its suit against the City of Los Angeles. The court said that the anti-camping ordinance law is, and I quote,
"one of the most restricted municipal laws regulating public spaces in the United States."
The court also said,
also stated that the Los Angeles Police Department cannot arrest people for simply sitting, lying, or sleeping on a public sidewalk in Skid Row. In the September of 2005, it was discovered that hospitals and law enforcement agencies were actually dumping homeless people onto the streets of Skid Row. The then mayor of Los Angeles at the time, a Mr. Antonio Villaraigosa, ordered a full investigation. And William Bratton, who was the LAPD chief at the time, claimed that the police department was not targeting homeless people specifically, but only those people who violated city ordinances or local laws. So that's all right then. In total, the Los Angeles City Attorney investigated more than 50 out of the 150 reported cases of what was soon to be called body or patient dumping. However, by early 2007, the LA City Attorney ended up filing charges against one of the hospitals called the Kaiser Permanente that was based in Oakland, California. And because there were no law specifically covering the hospital's actions, it was charged in an untested strategy with false imprisonment. On a quick interesting side note, an untested strategy is a case where there is no proof that an idea or an event is either true or effective. In the February of 2007, the California State Senator, a Mr. Gil Cadillo, sponsored legislation against the response to the lack of legal resource available to fight patient dumping. And since Mike Feuer took office as a city attorney in 2013, he has settled 8 additional cases of patient dumping with various hospitals around the Los Angeles area. The total settlements from all 8 of these LA hospitals has been over $4 million. Move forward again to 2012, and the Los Angeles Superior Court judge, a Mr. Craig Mitchell, decided to set up a fund called the Skid Row Running Club, which was put together as an effort to improve the livelihood of those who lived in the area. And in the May of 2019, the City of Los Angeles came to an agreement that removed the limit on the number of possessions that each individual could keep on the street in the Skid Row neighborhood, although the agreement does allow the city to seize any items that threaten public safety and health, as well as large bulky items such as pieces of furniture or appliances.
Appliances? What on earth would they plug them into?
Who knows? From 2020 to 2022, the COVID-19 pandemic, along with the rest of the world, hit the Skid Row area hard. This meant that the area continued to undergo problems that challenged the livelihood of many of its residents, mainly due to the city's procedures on safety and health. One example of this was on how it was nearly impossible for Skid Row to remain clean because of a new law in place that was forcing individuals to take down their tents during the day, which in turn brought many more health risks to the area. And another issue that arose during the COVID-19 pandemic was the ability to maintain hygiene at a time when strict sanitation protocols were highly recommended. What did not help the area was the closing down of all the public restrooms, stores and gyms, which in turn made it hard for many in Skid Row, which was mainly the homeless, to keep clean. So in an effort to try to resolve this issue, the Los Angeles City officials set up 360 hand washing stations and a dozen mobile shower trucks. and to offer more resources to the homeless on Skid Row, recreation centres were turned into temporary housing centres. I'll try that one again. Temporary housing shelters. After this second short break, in part three, we will look at Skid Row's demographics, its crime, its culture, and some of its landmarks.
Fright Nights was established in 1999 as the first company in the world to offer overnight ghost hunt experiences to the general public, pioneering paranormal events since the last century. Fright Nights operate at hundreds of the UK's most haunted and exclusive venues. All events have their own team of experienced paranormal investigators, mediums and psychics. They have a VIP members club for regular returning guests, offering loyalty discounts and exclusive invitation-only events. They can also host private events for your family and friends. You can contact them on 07 852 998 628 or email them at office@frightnights.co.uk. Or take a look at their website at www.frightnights.co.uk, where you can see the many locations they investigate and learn about them and the opportunities they have available. Hundreds of ghost hunters join Fright Nights every month for the most thrilling ghost hunting experiences they'll never forget. If you haven't been on a ghost hunt before, then why not join them to see what it's all about? Why not visit their social media sites for up-to-date information on all the places they visit and to see what's coming up in the future? They look forward to seeing you all soon. Fright Nights Ghost Hunting Events. Remember, only the original will do.
According to the City of Los Angeles, data regarding the Skid Row area in 2019, 53.1% of the population were born in California, 27% were born in another state, with 18.8% being born in another country, and 1.1% were native residents born outside of the United States. The total population has been estimated to be approximately 10,580 individuals over 0.392 square miles. However, there is currently no up-to-date approximation of the population due to limited data. In 2023, during the Los Angeles Longitudinal Enumeration and Demographic Survey, it was estimated that the population had increased by at least 13% after the COVID-19 pandemic, though no exact population estimate has ever been provided. But out of the 10,850 estimated to be on the Skid Row population, 7,004 were identified as male and 3,574 were identified as female. On an interesting side note, the Los Angeles Longitudinal Enumeration and Demographic Survey, or LALEADS for short, I could have said that instead, couldn't I really? Anyway, was put together by researchers to develop the effectiveness of the homelessness policy. It helped to document the number of people experiencing unsheltered homelessness over the course of a year in the Hollywood Skid Row and the Venice neighbourhoods of Los Angeles and other areas with historically high concentrations of street homelessness. It was launched in the autumn of 2021. Within the Los Angeles Police Department's central area, which includes Skid Row and other areas in downtown Los Angeles, crimes in Skid Row constituted about 59%. Within the first 2 years of the 2006 implementation of the Safer Cities Initiative in Skid Row, 18,000 people were arrested and 24,000 citations were given for non-violent offences, with this figure being 69 times higher than the rest of Los Angeles. Also, a figure that I feel is important to add is that amongst all these numbers, out of the 10,850 homeless people living in Skid Row, 9.90% of them are war veterans. Looking at a slightly lighter side to Skid Row, I have found that it is a home to many artists, and due to its location and bordering districts such as the Historic Core and the Arts District, Skid Row has often hosted festivals and events that cross its neighbourhood borders. For example, in 2019, a performance group called the Los Angeles Poverty Department began providing artistic resources to Skid Row, primarily in the form of theatre classes and other types of performances. A Los Angeles Times journalist, a Ms. Margaret Gray, claimed that audience members, and I quote,
somehow felt like part of a family.
And when the performers on stage, she noted, and again I quote,
while many charitable organisations focus on warehousing and policing homeless populations, the LAPD attempts to remind them of their unique humanity to empower them to take collective responsibility for their neighbourhood and one another's health and safety.
And since 2009, due to the success of the Los Angeles Poverty Department's theatre classes, they have also sponsored the festivals and events for all Skid Row artists. Also, in addition to the theatre classes, local residents can also take part in Skid Row Karaoke, which is a weekly event and open to all. One of the most notable places around Skid Row include a location known as Indian Alley, which is the unofficial name given to a stretch of alley in reference to the significance that the area held for the indigenous American Indians from the 1970s to the 1990s. Indian Alley actually comprises of a block at the officially named Word in Place, which runs south from Winston Street to East 5th Street and bounded to the west by Main Street and to the east by Los Angeles Street. Another very notable place in the area is the Skid Row City Limits mural, created in 2014, which is an 18 by 50 foot mural displayed on St. Julian Street. On it features a map demarcating Skid Row's officially recognised boundaries, alongside an official-looking sign, replete with a city seal reading, and I quote,
Skid Row city limit, population, too many.
This composition is the initial installation of a mural project that is planned to eventually cover the whole wall on the St. Julian block, which is north of 6th Street. It was installed in compliance with the City of Los Angeles Mural Ordinance, and the project was created and organized by the Skid Row community activist General Jeff Page for his Issues and Solution organization, with mural installation led by the local street art crew called the Winston Death Squad. Installing the mural was carried out solely with volunteer labour from the Skid Row citizens and without the aid of any non-profit service organisations. The piece itself represents a reaction to the growing practice among commercial groups who keep referring to its historic areas of Skid Row with alternative designations. There is also an adjacent companion piece to the mural titled Skid Row Map, which emphasises the area's historic and official significance. With the Los Angeles City Councilman, a man named Mr. Jose Huzar, hailing the mural, saying, and I quote, "It's community pride on one hand, it's cleverly done, and it creates conversation and debate, with which very often great public art does." The area of Skid Row does have its claim to fame, as it is notable for being the location in numerous movies and television shows, including The Sting, Beretta, Hill Street Blues, Police Story, Quincy M.E., and of course not forgetting Starsky and Hutch. Remember any of those? Happy days. Skid Row was also used as a location for filming the music videos for Michael Jackson's songs, including Beat It in 1982 and The Way You Make Me Feel in 1987. And of course, let us not forget when the rock band U2 performed their 1987 single, Where the Streets Have No Name, upon the rooftop of the song's music video, with the performance itself referencing the Beatles' final concert, as shown in the film Let It Be. On an interesting side note here, during their rooftop shoot, U2 played an 8-song set, which included 4 performances of Where the Streets Have No Name. Prior to filming, a week was spent reinforcing the roof of the liquor store to ensure it would not collapse if it were to be overrun by a group of fans. A backup generator was also put on the roof so the shooting could continue in the event that the authorities shut off the power on the primary generator, which did actually happen during the filming. The depiction of the police attempting to shut down the filming due to safety concerns actually happened during filming, just as it is seen in the video. And to cap it all, the producer of the video, Mr. Michael Hamlin, was almost arrested following a confrontation with the police. Unexplainers. Just to be honest and upfront with you, I myself have never visited Skid Row, so this is me talking as an outsider. But I think, and this is just my opinion of course, there are several reasons for the ever-growing crisis of homelessness in this area, and pretty much most of the planet to be fair, but specifically and for the sake of this podcast, I'm talking about Skid Row in Los Angeles. One thing is that people are, sadly, falling into homelessness at a very fast rate. And although there are some groups, both the local councillors and voluntary organisations, who are able to place some people in permanent housing, they can't keep up with the steady increase of new people who need help due to, and I hasten to add, no fault of their own, having fallen on hard times. This, I think, is primarily due to 2 things. 1, the lack of affordable housing, and 2, the skyrocketing rents in both the towns and cities. The Skid Row area continues to be a hotbed of homelessness, with drug use, mental health crisis, sexual assault, and even human trafficking all on the rise. And sadly, as city officials have noted many times over the years, but also from what I have read and researched, failed to do much about, it does not look like it will change anytime soon. The Los Angeles Police Department's senior lead officer, Mr. Dion Joseph, told the New York Post on the 3rd of October of 2023 about Skid Row He said, and I quote, "It is probably the worst I have ever seen it in over 20 years.
Thank you all for taking the time out to listen to this episode of Mark's Unexplained World. In our next episode, show number 98, we are going to be looking at the Amherst Poltergeist. The Amherst Poltergeist was a notorious case of reported poltergeist activity in Amherst, Nova Scotia, Canada, between the years 1878 and 1879. The activity centred on Esther Cox, who lived in a house with her married sister, Olive Tweed, Olive's husband, Daniel, and their two young children. The phenomena continued for some months and became very well known locally. Visitors to the cottage, including clergymen, heard banging and knocking and witnessed moving objects themselves, often when Esther herself was under close observation.
This show was written and researched by myself, Mark Hughes, and proofread and edited by Linda Hughes. The pronunciations of all the names and places, though, was all mine. The actors in this episode were Mark Hughes, Linda Hughes, Denise Pooler, and Tilly Treadwell from The Weird Walk Home. With special thanks to Neil Packer and the staff at the Haunted Antiques Paranormal Research Centre in Hinckley. And a big thank you to everyone for listening. And again, just to add, if you are listening to this show on YouTube, please give us a review and a thumbs up and subscribe to my channel. And if you are listening on any of the podcast platforms, again, give us a like and a follow. I thank you in advance. Mark's Unexplained World, because there's more to the paranormal than meets the third eye. And remember, guys, keep it real, because being real is better than being perfect. This show and all its contents are covered by basic copyright of Mark the Medium.